Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker Euro 2016 review show with your host Greg Johnson. We're joined by Ollie Young-Miles today. How are you doing, Ollie?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm not bad. James McManus is here again.
Hello.
And Amar Singh. How are you doing, Amar?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, it is, yeah. For listeners in the evening, we're also online 24/7. But thanks for joining us anyway. Obviously, in the final, Portugal greased France in their own backyard with Ronaldo finally winning a major international honour, although he actually wasn't on the pitch for most of the game. What did we all think of the final, and how did it kind of cap off a tournament that some people haven't been quite sure about? Amar, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a sort of drab and dreary affair, really, and I think a lot of finals these days are. I mean, if you look in Euro 2008, the final was 1-0. World Cup 2010, the final was 1-0 after extra time. In 2012, that was the exception. Spain won 4-0. In 2014, it was 1-0. So I think a lot of these major tournaments, the finals tend to be an anti-climax, with two teams often, you know, being cautious first rather than actually trying to blow away the opposition. So I wasn't expecting much, but I think it was a fitting final for this tournament. If you look at the stats of this tournament, there was 2.12 goals per game, which was the lowest average since Euro 96. Mm. So, you know, overall, it was a pretty mundane tournament and it was a pretty mundane final.
James, you had Portugal down as one of the dark horses for the tournament.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes.
Although I maintain you can't have a dark horse with Cristiano Ronaldo.
Won it without Cristiano Ronaldo on the pitch. So the dark horse, that's the only prediction I got right.
Is it like when a horse wins the Grand National without a jockey on its back and therefore it doesn't count?
Yeah, they're better without the jockeys on their back, aren't they?
So. Less weight.
Jockeys just holding them down, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. What did you make of Portugal's final win? Do you think it was a fitting performance or did they get away with it a bit?
I think the Hungary game where they drew 3-3, they were playing a bit more expansive, but then they ditched Andre Gomes, a bit more of a ball player, brought in João Mario and Adrian Silva, a bit scrappier, and they kind of just shut up shop. Like Jose Fonte had an excellent tournament. Interesting fact doing the rounds on Twitter is he's the only player ever to win the Johnson's Paint Trophy. Ooh. And the Euros. And there was a quote from him after the game. He said, I was playing League One only a few years ago. This was like beyond belief. It's like a Hollywood film. And he was excellent. I think him and Pepe were the best centre-half pairing at the tournament, weren't they?
So, Ollie, do you think that Jamie Vardy may have a blockbuster to compete with next summer? Do you reckon the Fonte movie has legs?
Yeah, I think so. I think bringing him in was the turning point for Portugal, really. First few games, they had Pepe, they had Carvalho. Carvalho's legs are gone, basically. The 3-3 game against Hungary showed him up. At this level, he just can't do it anymore. Fonte came in, they were so much more solid, as Maka said. I think that was the turning point for them. That's when they started to really get some momentum.
Do you think we saw the best of Portugal, or are Portugal still kind of flattering to deceive, given the amount of talent they've got, the dribblers they have on the pitch? Did you expect a better version of football from them?
Yeah, I think they're a team in transition. You know, they've got a lot of top-class youngsters coming through, and they just need Ronaldo and Nani, Moutinho, Pepe, just to help guide them along. I think in 2-4 years' time, they could be very, very good.
Amar, do you think this could be a win that kind of takes Portuguese football up to where we expect it to be? Maybe this could give them the confidence to, you know, maybe try and find that striker they've been missing forever. I don't know if a tournament win's going to help them with that, but, I mean, Adair did win the trophy for them this summer. But do you think Portugal can step up and become a really major European nation now in football?
Yeah, you know, I think they have been for quite some time now, since the sort of golden generation emerged at the turn of the century. Portugal have been, you know, in the reckoning, reaching, you know, many semi-finals and finals during that period. So I think, you know, Portuguese football has been at a very high calibre. And sort of after Netherlands won the Euros in 1988, they sort of became... inherited that mantle as the best international team never to win an international tournament, which they, you know, which was a monkey they got off their back last night. So I think the future looks really bright for them. I think they're going to take a lot of criticism in this tournament, mainly because of the fact that they benefited from the format of the tournament. They finished third in their group. They didn't win a group game. They came through via the playoffs. So they were very much... this was very much a win for Platini's sort of bloated tournament format, and they've become the poster boys of that, if you like. But I think they deserve a bit more credit than that, particularly with their talisman out of action yesterday, with Ronaldo withdrawing so early in the game. They were able to really step up. A lot of the younger players really stepped up. And I think, you know, as Maka said earlier, defensively, I mean, not just the centre-backs, I think the full-backs were fantastic as well, especially Guerrero on the left. And Rui Patricio was superb, particularly last night as well. So I think that was the best defensive unit in the tournament by far, when all was said and done, and they're deserved winners.
Obviously, Portugal weren't the only side in the final. James, have you got any thoughts on France?
I mean, I think the future is still pretty bright. I think Deschamps didn't really ever solve his central midfield problem. He kind of fudged it a bit. Kante looked excellent in the opening game. Then he switched it around again. Kabay came in for a one-off game in Switzerland. He looked excellent, dropped him again. Matuidi and Pogba. Pogba is not a ball-playing midfielder, is he? He's not a deep-line playmaker. That's not what you put him in the team for. He's a rangy all-rounder who's best bombing forwards and just picking his moments. He's a moments player, isn't he? You're kind of denying him his moment by sticking him so deep in front of the back four. You're forcing him to be a Pirlo figure when he's never going to be that. Matuidi, in a two, can't run the channels like he's so good at. So you've basically got two world-class midfielders playing slightly out of position to fit a system they're not suited to. Thought Moussa Sissoko was excellent again. He's the biggest shop window footballer ever. Someone should just buy him so he has to keep stop touting himself, because he's he's like his own PR at the moment. But I think interestingly, it's a tournament for the underdog, isn't it? And Fernando Santos managed Greece in 2014, won the Euros. Claudio Ranieri won the Premier League this year with Leicester, also managed Greece in 2014. So maybe that's just where England should look next, just whoever's got the Greek job at the minute.
That's a novel idea. But one reason why the Pogba-Matuidi midfield axis, I guess, didn't quite maybe work as people expected was the form of Antoine Griezmann. He was the kind of gem in the crown of France's attack. And there's been a lot of interesting players with interesting performances this summer, even if a lot of individuals didn't shine because tactics and teamwork kind of got in the way a bit. And Mark, who have been your players of the tournament? Let's start with general, like the best player of your 2016. Probably going to be Griezmann, isn't it?
Has to be Antoine Griezmann. I think there was a lot of pressure on France at this tournament. You could see, particularly in that first game against Romania, they were feeling the weight of the nation on their shoulders. The narrative around them after the Bataclan terrorist massacre last year was that the team were going to, you know, bring the feel-good vibe back to France after, you know, such an awful event. And of course, Griezmann's sister was in the Bataclan that night, so he had a personal stake in all of that. Yet, conversely, he seemed to be having the most fun at the Euros. He really seemed to be enjoying himself, playing with freedom, celebrating his goals in a unique way, imitating Drake. He just seemed to be enjoying himself and playing with freedom. And that's great to see. That's what you want to see at a major tournament. There's just not enough of that these days. Footballers tend to be so serious, so sullen. You know, I'm thinking England, you know, just the weight of the world on their shoulders. I thought Griezmann was fantastic. And you're right, I think that his form and the fact that he moved centrally in the game against Ireland, and that changed everything, meant that Deschamps then had this midfield conundrum to deal with and absolutely fudged it, you know. And I think Pogba ended up suffering. But against Iceland, you know, Griezmann, when he scored the one of the goals of the tournament, that amazing chip, when Pogba was able to get forward, the two of them looked like, you know, seriously dangerous kind of pairing, if you like. And he also brought the best out of Giroud as well. So it's a shame from the French perspective that they weren't able to get over the line in the end. But I think Didier Deschamps, on reflection, made more mistakes, and they got to that final despite him rather than because of him.
Ollie, do you think that Griezmann's poor performance in the final counts against him, or is he also your player of the tournament?
I'd say he's my player of the tournament. He was their talisman. Six goals. He's the second. Platini's the only player to score more goals in a single tournament with nine. I just think the issue with him was when he was playing out wide, he was ineffective. Deschamps had to put him in that second striker role where he can run the channels inside. And that's what messed up the system somewhat. But yeah, I'd say he was the best player. But if we're picking a player from the winning team, I think it would have to be Pepe. I thought yesterday he was outstanding, won everything in the air. Their defence was the foundation of their success. Ronaldo as well wasn't at his best. But if you think about Portugal's decisive moments, he was the man. Two goals against Hungary, created the winner against Croatia, netted the decisive penalty against Poland. And obviously semi-final, it was the Ronaldo show. So, I mean, he wasn't at his best.
Well. He wasn't even stood up.
He was on the touchline. He was the manager last night as well. So he wasn't at his best, but he was decisive still. And you could make a case for him winning it.
James, are you going to go with Griezmann as well for a clean sweep? Or maybe you're going to join Pepe and make it a bit interesting?
I lean more towards Pepe than Griezmann. I didn't think Griezmann was all that superb in the group stages, which is nearly 50% of the tournament, isn't it? I thought Jerome Boateng was absolutely unreal this tournament. Yeah. His distribution from the back with both feet, long passing is just out. I haven't seen a centre half do it before like that. I thought Toni Kroos was brilliant again. I thought he was best player on the pitch against France by miles and a bit further, more advanced role. Just, it was like extreme levels of Toni Kroos, like not giving away the ball and creating chances and having shot. It was everything. It was him at his peak, basically.
Am I right in thinking he played one less game than Xavi in Euro 2020?
And he's already made more passes than Xavi did. That's when incredible. Spain won the Euros. And I thought Rui Patricio, I mean, that's probably the best goalkeeping display I've seen in a final in some years. Yeah. So they're not winning the tournament if he doesn't have a great game.
He was my man of the match doing the play ratings last night.
A couple of things that have held Portugal back in years has been lack of a top class centre forward, but it's also been they've had pretty dodgy goalkeepers. Like Vita Baia was okay, but I mean, he was world class last night.
Yeah, I'll add another couple of honourable mentions to that list. Aaron Ramsey, I thought, was excellent throughout. He really showed his worth actually when he was suspended for that semi final. And Wales didn't look like the same team. And I thought Laurent Koscielny, until he got sort of left for dust last night by Eder, was amongst Pepe and Boateng for sort of centre back of the tournament. Koscielny looked really good, so I think Arsenal fans can take a lot of encouragement for how Koscielny and Ramsey played at this tournament.
I'd have to put Bonucci in there as well. If we're talking about top class defenders, I thought he was outstanding in an Italy team that I think were up there for the team of the tournament, given the players they had, going out to Germany on penalties, who had a much better side than they did, beating Belgium, beating Spain. You know, they were very unfortunate. I thought he was the big guy for them.
We talked about the leading stars. Let's now look at the best youngsters. I mean, Renato Sanchez won the award for best youngster of the tournament. Are there any other names? Obviously, everybody knows how good Sanchez was. So let's try and think of some other names that we thought stood out from kind of under 23 bracket.
Kimmich was impressive.
Yeah. He's a freak. He's playing. He's not a right back. I don't think he's ever played right back before. Yeah. He's like 5'7", and he's just a freak. Isn't
he's like Lahm in reverse.
Yeah, you can see he's had that Pep Guardiola schooling, if you like, and is very much a modern utility player. But he was very, very impressive. I mean, in that semi final, he was all over Evra, and I think Germany didn't quite make that count, but you know he had Evra for dinner in that semi final
in his first season of top flight football as well. Last year he was playing for Red Bull Leipzig as well in the second division of German football. That's a talent, that is.
I thought Jose Guerrero, left back for Portugal, was very impressive. Obviously Dortmund have just signed him this summer in their quest to sign everyone under the age of 21 who will be world class in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
Klopp was right, they're sorted. They might have lost quite a few big stars, but they've basically bought every biggest hot property in Europe. And so they're sorted for the next few years. I also thought Eric Dier was good before England crashed out. Thought he was a bright spark for England. Very much looks like he could be a world class player in the future. Who else? I've got these names written down. Samuel Umtiti was good. I thought he looks Barcelona DNA, was how he is on the ball. And a bit of a lesser known one, that Hungary centre midfielder, Adam Nash. He's a ball playing centre midfielder. He's only 21. I think he's going to sign for Benfica, is the rumour doing the rounds this week. So I think he'll be one that people will have to keep an eye out for in future.
I was going to mention Nash as well. I think he got 90% pass accuracy during the tournament. I think Hungary, a lot of people were looking at the golden oldies, you know, Gábor Kiraly, Zoltán Gyula. But he was the pace setter in midfield. He was making things tick for them. I think he's got a very, very big future.
Ben Davis as well. He's basically playing left centre half role. He's a left back. He just didn't look out of place. Like if Spurs ever have an injury crisis, they should have no qualms about him sticking at centre back. He's very good there.
I'll add Emre Mor to that list.
Oh, yeah.
Another Dortmund bound young star.
They're just signing everyone, isn't they?
Yeah. They've
got Ousmane Dembele as well.
Yeah. They're all going to end up at Bayern Munich in a couple of years, though. That's a sad thing. But no, he looked brilliant. Whenever he played, Turkey looked a much better team. Mm. It all seemed to click. Everything seemed to flow through him. And, you know, for a lad who's only, I think he's only 18, that was exceptional. He was he looks really good. He looks like a real prospect for the future.
It was like Yanezai on the Moyes, wasn't it? He was, you know. Then a young lad to
raise on the Moyes against Sunderland. That's very, very strange.
I think one other to throw out as well, Kingsley Coman was very, very good.
Yeah.
He completed 14 take-ons, I think, something like that.
Cometh the hour, cometh the Coman.
He was very good, very good impact player. I think last night as well, he was the one, really, that looked like he'd make something happen for France.
Mm.
Griezmann should have scored from his cross. I think he had another moment that could have resulted in an assist as well. I think Pep Guardiola has just had a huge, huge impact on him. And it'd be interesting to see whether Sterling can go on and do what Coman did.
He's 20 season. And he's won the Serie A, the Bundesliga, and if he'd won last night as well, it's not a bad CV for a 20-year-old.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. Who were your flops of the tournament? We've talked about the good guys. Let's go to the bad and the good, the bad and the ugly.
Harry Kane.
Ooh.
Absolutely. Very disappointing. He just looked knackered though, didn't he? So, I mean, it's not necessarily his fault, and he was being asked to do absurd things by Roy Hodgson. Joe Hart shouldn't be England's number one anymore.
Big call.
Should be Jack Butland. Dele Alli again just looked knackered. And Ibra, who's an absolute caricature of himself, trying to talk himself up. Like, I'm going to reveal my move at this press conference. It turns out to be his clothing line. I'm like, just have score a goal, mate. Do your job first.
I think Thomas Muller was the big, big disappointment.
Yeah. He doesn't really do Euros, does he?
No,
he's master of the World Cup
scored at the Euros, which is shocking.
10, 11 games at the Euros.
It just didn't happen for him.
No.
Another disappointment was David Alaba.
Yeah.
We all know what a talented player he is. You know what a talented player he is, Greg. You're a big fan of him. But I mean, playing up front for Austria, was that really the right way to utilise?
He's not a nine, is he?
Great,
I think,
talent.
It's proved beyond all reasonable doubt.
Like, hey,
he's
let's
not
put
a nine.
Our best player, our most, you know, our highest pedigree player. Let's make him our striker. It was just a bit ridiculous, really. And Lewandowski, I think, as well. I mean, he had his moments in the end, but when you consider he was one of the form strikers this season.
Played a different role, didn't he? Like, he basically had to do all the donkey work for Milik.
I kind of felt sorry for him because all of his kind of teammates didn't quite have the finishing that he needed them to. Like, he did.
Yeah.
He was mocked at our game so often, which you can say is his fault. He didn't break through the mark.
He's there to finish, though, isn't he? He's a great finisher, and there's nothing he can't do as a finisher. And you just he almost seemed to be a yard off the pace. He seemed to defenders seemed to dominate him in too many games, and quite a few average defenders as well. So I was really disappointed personally with Lewandowski. Also, I picked him in the sweepstakes, so personally he cost me a bit of money as well. So
I think special mention to Ukraine, who didn't score a goal or win a point. So thanks for coming.
Yeah, again, I think we can thank Platini for that, for making the tournament bigger. And you did have a few teams there that just shouldn't have been there, just weren't at the level required. Albania, Ukraine, Romania,
Russia.
I mean, what was the point of Russia apart from all the aggro and violence that came with some of their fans?
Michel Salgado said yesterday that he's one of 40 ex-players in the ex-pros that have been asked about potentially expanding the World Cup to 40 teams. So I think we're going to get used to a lot more of this kind of tournament football.
Do you think that's the big problem with Euro 2016 then? Is it the expanded number of teams?
Isn't this the last Euros that's going to be in one host nation?
That's
as
true
well?
As well, yeah.
Like, maybe that will spread the violence around a bit better next time.
I think we've seen with the scandals that have come out around FIFA over the last sort of year or two, that, you know, football governance has become too money-minded, too driven, too corporate, and the people in charge do not necessarily have the best interests of the game.
Make 2 billion, I think, at the Euros, UEFA.
Yeah,
what,
I mean,
what do they need 2 billion for?
Exactly, the TV rights are now so lucrative that the fans who are able to travel to the game are the ones who are going to be hit in the pocket. So Euro 2020, where it's going to be played in 13 cities, is there going to be a sense of occasion in 13 cities? Is there going to be an atmosphere? Is it going to be like a proper tournament? it's just going to cost fans a hell of a lot if they want to follow a team. It's designed for to maximise corporate money, maximise the corporate boxes and sell them and the TV rights as well. And I mean, it's a real shame. It's a real shame.
I think it's going to be a logistical nightmare as well for the teams. I mean, how are they going to train at a certain base? There'll be no momentum going forward.
Mm.
Just always on a flight going from one place to the other. I can't see it working at all. Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And now that we're out of Europe, not just in football, but politically as well, we're probably going to have to... It's going to cost fans more in terms of visas. It's going to cost them more in terms of accommodation. They won't have access to healthcare in European cities. The football team, it will cost more. So we won't just be spending loads of money wasting it on a coach like we did with Hodgson. We'll also be wasting loads of money on visas as well. So, yeah, it's going to cost England a lot more.
I mean, the healthcare thing might sound like a small thing to bring up in a football tournament, but considering the amount of bloodied heads that were in Marseille, that's, you know, it's a fair point.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a fair point. Just to wind it back slightly, we've talked about the players. We've also talked a little bit about UEFA's incompetence and commercial mindedness. But the managers of the tournament, who do we think did the best with what they had and who kind of underperformed a bit? Ollie, have you got any thoughts on the manager that stood out to you either way?
Yeah, I'd say one man head and shoulders above anyone else was Conte.
Mm.
As I said, limited squad to work with. Hit at the start of the tournament with Verratti and Marchisio getting injured. That's, you know, they're two big centre midfielders, both out. He was a tactical masterclass, really. He planned his team for their opponents. And as I said, they were very unfortunate to go out in the quarters. And it'll be interesting to see how he does with Chelsea. I think he'll be a huge success. I wasn't convinced when they appointed him, but I think this tournament has really sort of strengthened, you know, the case for why Abramovich, you know, wanted him so badly. I think he did really, really well with what he had.
And who stood out as a manager that underperformed?
Well, Roy Hodgson's the obvious one, isn't he? I think Turkey and Austria as teams are very disappointing.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, Hodgson's the main one, isn't he?
He's just a man who got overpromoted because he got the job on a technicality of a legend who recommended him.
And he's the legend who recommended himself,
exactly,
isn't he?
Yeah. So, I mean, he did a really bad job, didn't he? So Belgium should be hitting. It was all cleared up for him to make the final and to deliver on their golden generation.
Mm.
And absolutely bottled it against Wales, didn't they?
And to be fair, Wales, you could argue, are one of the best managers of the tournament as well.
Chris Coleman did a superb job, didn't he? He stumbled in qualifying to this 3-5-2 system, changed it up a little bit more at the tournament. He just had so much defensive cover.
Mm.
He just did very well with what he had. Like Howard and Kanu, who's a championship player who was now a free agent, and he turned him into one of the stars of the tournament, arguably. So,
is he your top manager, Chris Coleman?
I mean, surely it has to be the guy that won the thing. Fernando Santos actively changed Portugal's game plan on the hop, brought in a couple of different players to suit the style change. So it probably has to be him, but I thought Coleman was
And he had
impressive.
A new assistant manager last night as well. So
exactly. Yeah. Ronaldo, so. Very bossy, very bossy.
Amar, who were your managers to watch and the ones to forget, maybe?
Yeah, Coleman and Conte were both really fantastic for me. Hodgson was an absolute disaster. I mean, the charge sheet against him just runs on and on and on, and the inquest will run on and on and on. Why was Harry Kane taking set pieces? Why did he go into that game against Iceland with a front three that have not played 1 minute against each other? Why did he, after a 100% record in qualifying, change things up just to shoehorn Wayne Rooney into the team and put him into midfield? Why did he have Dele Alli and Harry Kane and actually split them by putting Rooney in between them? I mean, just so many things that he did wrong. And the fact that he was paid 3.5 million and then sort of belligerently turned around and said, I don't need to explain myself to you. Here's my statement. I don't know what I'm doing
that
here.
That was staggering, wasn't it?
Yeah, before he went off into the sunset with his 3.5 million from the FA. Thanks a lot, Roy. You know, that was an absolute disaster, mate. For me, I think Lars Lagerbeck, actually, I was really impressed with him. I always thought he was a really good manager for Sweden.
Mm.
He managed Sweden for about a decade, I think 9 years, from 2000 and 2009. And he ended up losing his job because they fell short of qualification for the 2010 World Cup. But, you know, he managed a team at the time he took them to several international tournaments during that time, brought through talents like Ibrahimovic, managed out talents like Henrik Larsson, And I always thought he was a fantastic, wily manager. He went to Nigeria. I didn't really work out for him at Nigeria. I think he was there for about a year before he went to Iceland. And now, you know, he's got the freedom of Reykjavik. They absolutely love him. And if we're talking about managers who made the most out of what they had, you know, this is the guy managing a team from a country with a population the size of Croydon, you know, and they absolutely destroyed England. They were very, very impressive. And, you know, it was a bit too far, I think, when they got blown away by France and they were 4-0 down at half time. But
he still kept going. He still got another goal.
They kept going, exactly.
Won the second half, didn't
they? Exactly. So I think he deserves credit. Iceland were, you know, for many people, the story of the tournament, the underdogs of the tournament. Wales also up there as well. But, you know, I think we all enjoyed Iceland. And, you know, Lagerbäck deserves credit for that.
I think that brings us nicely to what were your favourite moments, teams and kind of key memories will be of the whole tournament. I mean, Iceland are clearly going to be up there. Everyone loved seeing them go as far as they were. I mean, obviously England didn't when they beat them. But Ollie, what are the kind of memories that you'll take from Euro 2016? How will you remember it?
Ultimately, as a tournament that just didn't live up to its billing. I think the format was all wrong.
I've just built up Iceland as a big positive thing, and you're bringing us all down again, man.
Sorry, Greg, but it just wasn't. I was really excited going into it. I thought it would be a great tournament, but ultimately the quality wasn't there, really. I think the Germany-France semi-final was probably the one game that I can actually remember that was actually a quality game with two very good sides head-to-head. But on a positive note, it was good to see some of the underdogs flourish. Iceland getting to the quarters was ridiculous, really. They thoroughly deserved it, obviously, but Wales as well. Those two teams finished second in their qualifying groups, so they may not have made it under the last format. So in some ways the 24 team tournament was a negative thing, but obviously we get to see teams like Iceland and Wales flourishing like they did, so probably the main thing for me.
And another team that I know you were impressed by until they went out was Croatia. Did their kind of plummet from being everyone's like big dark horse favourite to being crashed out by Portugal, that kind of sort of the tournament for you?
Yeah, I mean, it happened at the World Cup as well. All the really interesting teams kind of went out of the quarterfinals at the World Cup, like Colombia and Chile went out, and Croatia were probably the interesting team left in the draw and went out. It just felt that the tournament, whenever it felt like it was going to start getting going, it just kind of went and it kick-started again. You got a little stutter and then back to the boring football.
Kind of true of the final as well. Everyone's expecting France to turn up and put in a like signature performance, and then no.
I mean, Ronaldo going off almost sort of shocked them. Like they they felt that they had more time to play with it than they had. Yeah. They took Portugal less seriously because the main threat had gone off the pitch, and they obviously felt it was inevitable that they were going to win. The sense of entitlement was very real, wasn't it? I think these tournaments are always defined by their opening game. I think the 2010 World Cup was the Vuvuzelas annoying as hell. The hosts were pretty rubbish, and it was a pretty ropey game in terms of quality. And 2014 World Cup, Brazil were amazing in the opening game, won 3-0, and it set the tone for a lot of goals. This one was it 2-1 the opening game?
Yeah.
And last minute winner through Payet. It was like, yeah, the moment, the quality is there, but it's really struggling to break through.
Granular almost.
Yeah.
I think for me, Portugal were like the party poopers of this tournament. They sort of revelled in that role. Everyone expected Croatia to beat Portugal because they'd played so fluently, so brilliantly in the group stages, and then Portugal spoiled the party there. Portugal did the same thing against Wales. Everyone was backing Wales. You know, Wales were one of the great underdog stories, and then in that sort of devastating five-minute spell, they just crushed Welsh dreams, you know. And then last night they did the ultimate party pooping act by destroying, by beating the hosts in the final. So I think they had this siege mentality, actually, and I think they weren't afraid to sort of try out the dark arts a little bit. You know, Ronaldo was brilliant, he was talismanic, but he was also demanding the referee show a yellow card to every opponent that touched him throughout, you know, that tournament. So I think they revelled in that role. But, you know, there's different ways to play football, and it's not always about just going out there and trying to beat the team with wonderful, fluent passing and goals. Sometimes you've got to try a little bit of the anti-football, which Conte did really well against Belgium in that opening game. That was remarkable. So I think Portugal, for me, will be, you know, champions that will be remembered and admired, but maybe not loved. The other thing, I mean, that I'll take from this tournament his fans, and I think that's good and bad, really. I think there was working in digital media as we do, we get lots of video through, lots of content. We're monitoring social media, and there were some fantastic fan videos coming through, fans having fun in France, really enjoying being in Paris and Lille and Nice, celebrating with the locals, drinking, you know, partying, singing songs, Will Griggs on fire, you know, even though he just sat on the bench for the whole tournament. You know, that was fantastic. But then conversely, some of the scenes that we saw in Marseille, I don't think any of us will forget some of the most, you know, profound violence that we've seen since sort of maybe Charleroi in 2000, involving, you know, so-called England supporters, involving organised Russian gangs, local French ultras as well, and the riot police in France, who are pretty bad at keeping the peace, it has to be said. And I think it's a bit of an ill portent, really, for the 2018 World Cup. We have to be really concerned about what those Russian gangs are going to do in their own backyard, because there's no way of banning them from Russia, because that's where they are. And I think their links to the Russian Football Federation, their links to the to Russian politics as well, are to be a real concern, I think, going forward.
I think the head of their fan group was actually part of the official delegation from the Russian Football Federation.
Frightening.
Who's going to want to go to that tournament? Like, who's honestly going to want to pay money? It's going to be a lot of rubles to get over there. But I mean, every 12 years, the Euros throws up a massively surprising result. Denmark won it in 92. 12 years later, Greece won it in 2004. And last night, Portugal, the underdogs. It sounds weird we're calling Portugal underdogs. I call them dark horses. It does sound a bit strange, but, you know, their record since Euro 2000, they've made the quarterfinals one occasion, I think, the final twice, 1-1. I think they made the semis in the other three. So they're a tournament side. We shouldn't be that surprised that they won it. Mm. I mean, it's not going to be a overly fondly remembered tournament, I don't think.
But on that note, what was everybody's favourite match? There had to be at least one that made you go, ooh. Well, as you said, James, like, it kind of got going, but then it didn't. Which were the matches that kind of...
Croatia, Czech Republic, 2-2. That was a very, very good game. Very exciting. I really enjoyed... when you see Spain at their best, that's something I don't think another team can really do. So Spain dismantling Turkey 3-0, I thought was very impressive.
I liked Hungary versus Portugal. That was great. There was a real sense of, actually, what's going to happen next? I have no idea who's going to win this game. I've no idea what Ronaldo's going to do next. Ronaldo, that was the game where he showed up and he scored that remarkable backheel goal.
It reminded me of Die Hard. It was like Ronaldo in the Bruce Willis role, kind of, you know. The tower's going to explode, but I'm going to do everything I can to get through this. This is
He really stepped up for his side in that game, and you had Gabor Kiraly as well, and his antics as well. The only disappointment for that was the last sort of 5 minutes of that game, when nobody wanted to score because they all realised that a draw would get them through. But up until then, it was a really thrilling game.
I think Wales-Belgium has to be up there as well.
Yeah,
Rajan Angelin scoring a ridiculous goal from 30 yards, and then Hal Robson-Kanu, a player who hasn't even got a club, pulling off a Cruyff turn, sending three Belgian defenders, you know, hurtling off the pitch basically, and then slotting it past one of the best keepers in the world was, for me, up there with one of the best moments of the tournament. And that game overall was excellent. And the only bad thing for Wales was Ramsey picking up that yellow, because I think the semi-final would have been a lot closer had he played.
Mm. Do we think if Ramsey hadn't got suspended, Wales would have done a Portugal?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think it was a huge miss. Him and Davis as well. You've got to remember too. I mean, they're two players playing for the top three Premier League clubs from last season. With Wales, you've got such a mixed bag, really. You've got four or five genuine, very top quality players, and the rest sort of mid-table, lower-table Prem, top-level Championship. So missing two players of that calibre really, really hurt.
It upset the whole balance of the team, and you didn't have Ramsey, who was pressing really well from the front, and Ramsey and Bell dovetailing a lot throughout the tournament. Opposition defenders didn't really know who to pick up, who would be furthest forward. Ramsey was really, really impressive. I mean, if he had been playing, then you would have backed Wales all the way.
We have touched on this a little bit. But what do you think the legacy of Euro 2016 will be as a tournament? How will we look back on it in maybe even decades to come? Will this be a signifier of a new age of kind of cynical international football? Do you reckon this is a bit of an anomaly? How are we thinking?
I feel that it's bizarre, really. I mean, from an organisational point of view, it feels like this is the last sort of... the last great tournament, taking the sort of on the field, lack of action and lack of flair aside, the last great tournament in terms of how they've organised it, because 2018 is in Russia. As Macca said, most people won't want to go there. Half of the black players will probably be racially abused. Mm. You know, there's some serious concerns about Russia in 2018 that Mr. Putin's not going to answer or doesn't feel like he has to answer. 2020 is going to be the Ryanair / EasyJet tournament. You know, it's just going to involve 13 cities, no sense of togetherness, no sense of a host nation, no celebration concentrated in one area. Yes, it's great that the semi-finals and finals are at Wembley, but there's absolutely, you know, no chance that England are going to get that far. So I don't think we can get too excited from that point of view. And then 2020, as it stands, is in Qatar, which is going to be, you know, 100 degrees and absolutely ludicrous decision by a corrupt organisation in FIFA. So I just feel like, you know, this was the last great tournament in terms of the city, the cities involved and the country involved.
If we need any hope for the World Cup 2022, on Football Manager at the moment, it actually they get rid of Qatar and it goes to China, which might be a bit more interesting. That might be quite good. And it's
another home of civil liberties.
And China, well, yeah. absolutely. But it is a bit of an oracle. We trust it to find out our wonder kids. So maybe that'll be the future. I don't know. Ollie, what do you think the legacy of Euro 2016 will be?
Going back to a negative point again, unfortunately. I just think
sunshine
it was
and rainbows, isn't it, Ollie?
I just think that, like, another defining moment, the England Slovakia game, just obviously England were dreadful, but Slovakia just parking the bus, 10 men behind the ball to secure third place in the group to go through, just shouldn't be what our major tournament's about. And I think, unfortunately, going forward, as tournaments get more and more bloated, obviously the World Cup's going to go to 40, it looks like. European Championships may go to 32, I've seen, which, I mean, you're doing badly to not qualify for that.
And we've got that European League coming as well, haven't we? Yeah, where exactly. They're going to decide qualification for future tournaments based on how you do on a league structure.
So yeah, I mean, that's the main thing that I'm slightly concerned about going forward.
I think this is a wider issue with international football as well. You know, now the best coaches, the best tactical minds, the most positive coaches are in club football now. Mm. Ancelotti, Guardiola, Mourinho, Klopp. You know, these coaches are, you know, are nowhere near international football, and they may be seeing that as something they'll do when they're close to retirement. Mourinho has said he'd love to coach Portugal one day, but he's got bigger and better things to do first. And the fact that he views Portugal like that, and the fact that so many players see international football as something that will increase their image rights and, you know, will help them negotiate their next contract rather than the pinnacle that it used to be, is a real concern. And I think that was born out of a lot of the conservative coaching, a lot of the pragmatic tactics that we saw at this tournament was coaches who were more cautious and avoiding defeat, really, than wanting to actually go there and play, you know, swashbuckling football. It would have been great to see a tournament with the likes of Guardiola and Mourinho going at each other in an international tournament, but I don't think we'll ever see that day again, really.
Mm-hmm. I know you're a big admirer of midfielders, James, so I want to put a bit of an idea to you. As much as the football's been pretty poor at Euro 2016, for me, I think a lot of the teams, even though they haven't exactly been very expansive, it's pretty much been their central midfielder that's often been, like, the player that makes them tick. You've had Renato Sanchez for Portugal, Toni Kroos for Germany. I mean, Pogba hasn't quite been as, you know, spectacular as expected, but he's still been the man for France. Do you think that might be a trend? It's almost like Xavi brought the midfielder back into prominence. Did you ever see an evolution of that kind of role
in
this tournament?
I think centre midfielders now are probably better on the ball than they've ever had to be in the game. The use of the ball is probably more intelligent than it's ever had to be. And I think we're going to see a bit more of a reverse. Teams going back to 4-4-2 because they can trust two men in there to dominate midfield. It's not about numbers as much anymore. I think it's about how you retain possession and recycle it. Sideways, it's mocked whenever we tweet a pass map out. Luka Modric's completed 95% of his passes. Look how many are sideways. Yeah, but like having the ball's better than not. So.
Yeah.
Like it's quite tiring running around after it.
Luka Modric is not a big guy, but he can control the midfield because he's just so good at knowing where to be, how to use the ball.
I think the bar has been raised then by people like Xavi and Iniesta and Busquets. Like Busquets, I thought, had a very quiet tournament, and he's one of the best in the world at his job. And he was sort of marked out of games, wasn't allowed to really impose himself on them because the standard of everyone else has gone up.
Yeah,
I think. While we do criticise the format, and I do agree with that, I think it is a very poor format. It has given a lot of smaller nations moments that they'd have never had before. I think we've got more stories out of this Euros than previous ones. The story isn't like a Greek striker scoring three goals, or it's like Howard Sankanu, who's a free agent, scoring against Belgium. It's Iceland, it's Wales in general. It's Portugal going, not conceding a goal in like 360 minutes or something as they win the final. These are moments that you're not going to be... I can't really remember any other tournaments. One other really defining moment for me was the story yesterday that the French team bus on the way to, before it left the hotel, that the police did a controlled explosion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this is going to be a regular occurrence now, this sort of incident in every football tournament is going to be targeted now, because they're just so popular, so much money involved, such a big target. I think every major tournament from now on, this is like the not to darken the mood too much, but this is the tournament where football lost its innocence for good and proper.
Wow, this really is. I mean, it's serious, heavy stuff that we should be talking about, but this is quite a sober review of the tournament, yeah. Really, isn't it?
One of the things that was really missing for me was this tournament lacked a great number 10. I think. I mean, I think there was a lot of pressure on Pogba to step into the shoes of Zidane and Platini and really carry home the host nation in the tournament. But he's 23, you know, he's not that sort of player. And there seemed to be a lack of magic, you know. And I think I think of great tournaments and I always think of great number 10s. James Rodriguez was you know, exceptional. Messi was exceptional as well.
Özil as well, to be fair, yeah. The last World Cup.
Yeah, in 2014. In 2010, I remember how brilliant Schneider was for Holland, and he certainly drove them all the way to the final. You know, going further back, Zidane, even Maradona. For me, you know, international tournaments, sometimes you really look for these great number 10s, and I feel we lacked one at this tournament.
I feel like we've moved back into the age of the second striker almost. What do you think about the kind of striker dilemma at the Euros, Ollie?
I don't think the strikers were too much the issue. I agree with Amar. There wasn't sort of moments of individual magic. There were just magical moments. So Iceland's first goal, it wasn't an unbelievable strike from an unbelievable player. It was just, you know, an iconic moment.
From a throw-in, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like individual-wise, Griezmann was probably the stand-up. I wouldn't say there were, well, I mean, we were talking about it beforehand. You're thinking of the best player of the tournament. There's not that many, really, that you can sort of jump to.
Thought Hazard, if Belgium had gone on, he probably would have been player of the tournament. But he's again didn't really play in the 10 role, did he? De Bruyne did. De Bruyne was again very good, but I mean, it's like we mentioned earlier, as soon as the tournament was going to get going, like these players are ditched out. There's your 10's gone.
I mean, as much as the football hasn't been as spectacular as you're hoping, this has kind of been the tournament of the team. And I mean, you could argue that in proper team football, you don't need a 10, and therefore
Leicester isn't a freak. Like, this is going to keep happening now.
Because if the team's going to be the source of invention, the team is going to like build moves together. Why do you need one man directing things? Because surely that's redundant. Yeah. So maybe that's one of the other trends you're going to see.
Iceland didn't count on any one individual. They played collectively in a brilliant way.
I think Sigurdsson like created more interceptions than chances.
Yeah,
like that.
He can play as a number 10, but he certainly wasn't like a number 10 for Iceland at this tournament. And Wales, as I said, you know, Bale and Ramsey were dovetailing. I wouldn't say one of them was more dominant than the other. You know, Bale scored three goals, but ultimately they really played as a unit. Joe Allen, played a little bit like a number 10 at times as well. So a lot of short passes, but you know.
So are we saying Adrian Silva sums up Euro 2016? Is this what we're saying, people?
He's not the poster boy we wanted, is he? Let's be honest.
I'd say Giroud, maybe, is the personification of this tournament. sort of a lot to admire, a lot of great technique here or there, a lot of hard work, a lot of effort, but just lacking a bit of magic. A bit of magic. That's what I was looking for at this tournament, and there wasn't enough. Payet looked like he was going to be the man. After those
faded
first couple
badly,
of games,
didn't he?
Really did fade. Really
and again,
did
you
fade.
Can argue as the team got better, him as the individual was kind of overtaken by it as well. So anyway, on that note, because we are going to have to wrap it up, it has been a big Euro review, but you know, there's big and then there's too big. So we're going to end it there. But thanks for joining us, Amar.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ollie.
Thanks, mate.
And you can go on squawker.com and check out all our usual features, reports, analysis. Also check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/squawker and subscribe on iTunes to get all our great podcasts in the season to come. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.